The Torah says in the Isra Basa B'chol of Lo Savashal Gedi B'chalev Himo, says it three times, not to cook a lamb in its mother's milk, a kid in its mother's milk. The fact that it says it three times, we learn you're not allowed to cook it, you're not allowed to eat it, you're not allowed to have any enjoyment from it, if it's Torah. Now, it's not limited only to a lamb in its mother's milk, but any milk we'll see that is similar to a mother's milk, meaning a mammal's milk from a kosher animal, and any animal that is similar to a gedi, meaning a domesticated animal, a behema, not a chaya, and that's kosher, is also min haTorah. So the question is then, why did it say Lo Savashal Gedi V'Chalev Imo? Why did the Torah say it in such a way that it sounds like you only can cook a child in the mother's milk? And it's not an issue of cooking any animal that's kosher, any mammal that's kosher, any domesticated animal that's kosher in any mammal milk of kosher variety of animal. Why did, if it applies to everything across the board, why did the Torah say it in such a way that it sounds like very restricted? So there are different ideas. The Ibn Ezra says that usually cooking milk and meat is not very tasty. I don't know what's it called in the Goyisha world. There's a lot of dishes that are milk and meat. I mean, cheeseburgers and veal parmesan and other kinds of things. But usually even there, the people don't cook milk and meat mamish together. He says the only one that's really tasty is a lamb, but it doesn't explain why in the mother's milk specifically. But he says that's the normal thing that people would do. So the Torah speaks about the normal case, the average case, the more common case. That's the Ibn Ezra. Others say that aside from the isser of eating and the problem it has with affecting you because it's a prohibited food, there was another idea of why basar b'chalav is asr, because it was an idolatrous practice that they used to do. They used to mix milk and meat together as some kind of sacrifice to an idol, and they used that to bless their crops. The product was then put like fertilizer on the crops in order to secure a blessing for the crops. And that's why the Torah puts this together with Bikurim. The times that it mentions Basar B'chalav, two of the times that it mentions it together with Bikurim. Reishis Bikuri Ad Moscha Tavi Beis Hashem Elokecha, that you should bring your first fruits to the Beis HaMikdash, Lo Savashel Gedi B'Chalev Imo. So the Rishonim say that they go together because they used to have this idolatrous practice of cooking milk and meat to make the fruit grow better. So the Rabbanu Shalom wants you to bring Bikurim, right, and to bring nice Bikurim, but don't cook milk and meat in order to get that nice product. So there's a connection between them. And therefore, it could be that this idolatrous rite was limited to a mother's milk and then the child. So that's the foundation. But the Torah ushered all milk and meat, maybe for other reasons also, but this was the height of milk and meat where it also had this idolatrous practice. That's the second. I was thinking of a different idea. What the connection is between Basar B'chalav and Bikurim, and why the Torah puts it, why it mentions specifically the mother and the child. The concept of Bikurim we explained many times, that the Ribbono Shel Olam likes the first, because the first, even it may not be the best, but it's the foundation and root of everything that comes after. And how you start something, right, is very important, more important even than how you continue it. Right? If the foundation of a building is in the least blemished, the whole building is in danger of falling down, whereas if that same crack would be on the third floor, it wouldn't really be damaging at all. Same thing goes with the root. If the root of the plant is blemished in the slightest amount, the result comes out in the plant 1,000 times. But if the same blemish is on a leaf, it's meaningless. So how you start something, what its foundation is, what its root is extremely important. We always give one of the examples to that is the famous Yerushalmi by Acher. But I saw something from the Yavetz recently in a Sefer that I'm learning, which puts that whole thing into perspective. I mentioned it here. It's the first time ever mentioning it, because it's a very interesting point. We mentioned this Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi says, what made Acher, or what put him off the derech? Acher was Elisha ben Avuya, who went off the derech, became not only an apikoris, a min, but a son of Israel, used to give children over to the Romans to kill. So the Gemara says, our Gemara says, that Acher saw some very intensely troubling sights, and it pushed him off the derech. One of the things he saw was a father tell his son to go up and bring him some eggs from a bird's nest. He climbed up to get the eggs, and he shooed away the mother, as is the halacha, and on his way down, he fell off the ladder and was killed. So Elisha ben Avuya said the Torah promises long life for both of these mitzvahs, kibud av va'em, and for shivu l'chakein, l'man yarichun yomecha, v'harachta yom. Where's this kid's long life? She said, I can't believe anymore. And he went off the derech. Others say he saw the tongue of Chutzpis HaMeturgeman. Chutzpis HaMeturgeman was one of the people who relayed the shir that the Tanoim gave, various Tanoim. They weren't speakers, but they had the information. So they would whisper it in his ear, and he had a strong voice, and he was could speak well. So he was the relayer of the Meturgeman. And eventually they killed him. He was one of the Asori Murgi Malchus, and they didn't leave his body to be buried, and a pig came and ripped out his tongue and carried around in his mouth. So he said the tongue that said so much Torah, where this is how it ends up in a pig's mouth. So he went off the derech. So that's our Gemara. These things like bothered him to a point where it just pushed him off the derech. The Yerushalmi says that his problem started at the day of his bris. Day of his bris, his father Avuya was one of the Ashira Yerushalayim, one of the rich people in Yerushalayim, and he invited to Elisha's bris all of the rich people and all of the big Talmidei Chachamim. So they came to the Suda, and the rich people were eating, drinking, singing, dancing. And the Talmidei Chachamim said, they're enjoying the bris their way, let's enjoy it our way. They started learning Torah. And they went from Torah to Nevi'im, and Nevi'im to Ksuvim, and they were learning with such intensity that a fire came down and surrounded them. So Elisha, Avuya came over to them and said, what are you doing? Lighting fires in my house, you want to burn down my house, what's going on? They said, no, this is not a physical fire, it's a spiritual fire. We were learning with such intensity that we brought down the fire of Har Sinai. So he said, wow, that's the power of people who learn Torah. If that's the case, I want my son to learn Torah. I want him to be able to bring fire min hashamayim. And the way we've said this all the time in the past is, and since, this is the way I heard it from my Rosh Hashiva too, that since his intention of dedicating his child for learning Torah was shalom l'shem shamayim, wasn't for the sake of learning Torah, but was for the sake of bringing fire down from the heavens, and therefore his whole foundation was crooked, so he could have changed it. He could have redirected himself, but he didn't. So therefore, since his whole foundation was crooked, everything that ensued from that ended up him going off the derech. And there's no contradiction between the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi is just telling us why when he saw these things, he saw it in such a crooked way. When you have a crooked foundation, everything looks crooked. So later on in life, when he saw these things, he didn't come to the conclusion that his nephew did, Rabbi Yaakov. Rabbi Yaakov came to the conclusion that Shchar Mitzvah by Al Malekah, that there's no reward for mitzvahs in this world. The Rabbam Shalom chooses to reserve the Shchar of mitzvahs for a tzaddik in the next world, normally. Right? Doesn't mean you can't be paid for mitzvahs in this world, because a Rosh gets paid for his mitzvahs in this world. And sometimes a tzaddik can use up his zechuyos and getting paid in this world for things that happen in this world. But under normal circumstances, the Rabban Shalom saves the schar of mitzvahs for tzaddikim to the next world. So therefore, what happens in this world, that's not the reward for mitzvahs under normal circumstances. So when it says you have arichas yamim, it doesn't mean in this world, it means in the world that's totally eternal. But Elisha ben Avuya didn't see that, because his whole foundation was learning Torah to bring fire min hashamayim for personal benefit. So his whole perspective on life was what's a personal benefit. So he couldn't see that if the kid went up and he did a mitzvah and he got killed, what personal benefit did he get out of this? He didn't come to the conclusion that it was for the sake of Olam Haba. That's how we normally said this in the past. I saw that the Yavetz asked the following question. I'll make this a siyum, and I finished the Malos Hamidos. So Musar said, we're learning for a few years already, a little bit every morning. In the end, there is a Hagor from the Yavetz. He brings down this Maisa in the Malos Hamidos, and Rav Yaakov Emden asks on it, doesn't make sense. He said, Maisa, why should Elisha ben Avuya have been affected by his father's bad kavanah? Because his father dedicated him for Torah, l'shelo l'shem shamayim. What does it have to do with Elisha? And besides that, it says, la'olam yasuk adam b'torah v'mitzvah shelo l'shma, shemito shelo l'shma b'lishma. So what was so terrible? And that, my Rosh Hashiva says, there's a difference between learning Torah shelo l'shma and totally distorting the Torah. Meaning, if a person says, look, I know the purpose of learning Torah is to fulfill God's will or whatever, and there's a mitzvah to learn Torah, but I'm doing it for an ulterior motive. So he's learning shelo l'shma. He knows what Torah is. He's doing it for covet, for riches, whatever it may be. Then, and he knows that the goal is not that. The goal is to do it l'shma. So then mito shelo l'shma bo l'shma. But if you think Torah is there to bring fire from the heavens, that's the purpose of Torah. It's a total distortion. And you don't have any intention of ever going l'shma. That's the purpose you're learning. That's the goal. Then we don't say to mito shelo l'shma bo l'shma. But the Yavetz asks, the worst it is Torah shelo l'shma. What's so terrible? And how could somebody else's kavanah shelo l'shma hurt that kid? That's his question. And therefore he says a completely different pshat. Beautiful pshat. He says the problem wasn't that he dedicated him to Torah to bring Eish min Hashamayim. There's nothing wrong with that. That was fine. But you see from there that when the kid was born, surely when he was conceived, that wasn't the father's intention. He only after he saw that the Torah could bring fire from the heavens, then he thought about dedicating his kid to Torah. That means when the kid was conceived 9 months earlier, that wasn't on his mind. He wanted to have kids, or whatever, forever purpose, material purpose, but not to dedicate him to Torah. Because he only thought about this dedicating to Torah at the bris, meaning before that not. And that we know that the intention, the thoughts that a person has at the time of conception, that does affect the child. We know that bad thoughts or extremely bad thoughts could really affect the child in a very, very intense way. So that's what he says. Since we see that he only intended to dedicate him to Torah at the bris, that means before that he didn't think about that. That means 9 months earlier by the conception, he wasn't thinking about that. That's what affected Elisha. That we know, that affects the child. That's what affected him. In any case, so that is just off the thing, but that we see from over here the importance of the foundation. The root and the foundation, the reishis, is very important. And that is the intention of Bikurim. God doesn't want the best fruits. He wants the first fruits, because that sets the pattern for everything that comes afterwards. That's the root and the foundation. Okay, if that's the case, then you can understand the connection between Basar B'Cholov and Bikurim. Because Basar B'Cholov is the antithesis of Bikurim. Bikurim is take the foundation and dedicate it to God. Okay? The foundation of life in this world, for animals, for mammals, and for human beings, is mother's milk. Right? That is the food of root and foundation for an animal and for a human being. So that's the reishis. Okay? Now, if you take that reishis and you use it as a closed system just to take the animal and make him good for eating, then you're taking the foundation, instead of dedicating to God, you're dedicating it to fill your own stomach, to be able to cook this animal and prepare it so you can eat it. So you're taking the foundation and you're putting it into a closed system only for your own personal... You take the foundation and the animal and use the foundation for your own selfish purposes to cook the animal. That's the antithesis of taking the first and dedicating it to the Ribbono Shel Olam. So that's what it says. Reishis bikuri ad moscha. Bring your reishis to the Ribbono Shel Olam, but don't cook milk in a mother's milk, because that's mamish the antithesis of this idea of taking the reishis and using it totally only for your own purpose, right? Closing it in the system of cooking the animal so you can, with its mother's milk. And that's why the Torah says it in that way. Itak applies to all milk which has the concept of the mother and the child, but where it's the mother and the child, mamish, that's where it's most intense. This idea, you take the reishis of the child, and instead of dedicating it to the Ribbono Shel Olam, you dedicate it to your stomach. I think that's another idea also. So in any case, since the Torah says it that way, Lo Savasho Gedi Bechalevimo, it does have an effect on what the prohibition is. It's not only a kid in its mother's milk, but it has to be milk that came from an animal that has mother's milk. So it has to be a mammal, right? Only milk that comes from a mammal that's a kosher animal. Because it's talking about a gedi and its mother, the mother's also a kosher animal. So it has to be a kosher animal. But pig's milk is not osur basar b'chalav. You're osur because of pig, but not because of basar b'chalav. So you are allowed to cook, you're allowed or not, but it doesn't become the prohibition of basar b'chalav. It's not osur b'hanoah. If you cook even kosher meat in pig's milk or any other non-kosher variety animal's milk, it doesn't make it usher from the Torah because of basar b'chalav. That's clear. The nafkamina of that is, right? Or if you have milk that's from you have meat from a non-kosher animal. Pig's meat in cow's milk is also not usher from the Torah. The milk and the meat have to be from a kosher variety animal. That's according to everybody. So therefore, if you have dog food that is cooked in cow's milk, but the meat is horse meat or some other non-kosher variety animal, you're allowed to give it to your dog. So it's not prohibited from the Torah. So that is, that's clear. The question is the following. What about non-kosher meat from a kosher variety animal, but it's not kosher tea because it wasn't shechted? Nevelus, treifus, it was an animal that was killed other than shechita. So you were not allowed to eat that, so it's called a nevela, right? But the animal, the variety of the animal is kosher. It's a cow, just not kosher to eat because of nevela. So there's a difference of opinion. It really is in the klal of basar b'chalav, but there's a klal of ein isser chalal isser. You can't superimpose one prohibition on top of another. And since you're not allowed to eat it because it's nevela, so it doesn't become more osser not to eat because it's basar b'chalav. But there's no prohibition of cooking nevela in milk, right? As nevela. That's nevela doesn't have that prohibition, but basar b'chalav does. So there, that new prohibition can take effect. So it may not be osur to eat as basar b'chalav, only as nevela, but it may be osur to cook it as basar b'chalav, because of nevela doesn't include that prohibition. Now comes the problem. Okay, so it's not usher to eat because of basar b'chalav, but it's usher to cook. Now if you cook it, you're basically cooking meat that's not usher to eat because of basar b'chalav, but the cooking was usher. Does that create now an isser hanoah or not? Now, is it okay to have enjoyment from it? So if you have cow meat that wasn't shechted, that you cooked in cow's milk, right? So if you eat it, you're not going to be over basar b'chalav, you're going to be over asur nevela. The person who cooked it was over the isur of cooking basar b'chalav. How about now, can you have enjoyment or not? The Rambam holds it, you can have enjoyment. Because the enjoyment is only an extension of the eating, and here the eating is not asur because of basar b'chalav, it's asur because of nevela. That's the Rambam's nekuda, nifloa, that's not going to be asur. Others argue, and the Rambam hold it is asur b'hanoah. even though it's not osur b'achila, but the hanah is an extra added thing, and that can be affected. So therefore, if you have dog food that has cow's meat and cow's milk, or any other kosher variety, animal and milk, even though the meat wasn't kosher to eat, wasn't shechted, it's better not to use it, to feed your dog with, because it could be that it's osur b'ano, could be not, it's a suffix. Okay, so that's that. Okay, next. Not only doesn't it apply to non-kosher variety animals, it also applies to non-domesticated. It doesn't apply to non-domesticated. In other words, a deer is a chaya. A buffalo is a chaya. What other chayas are there that are kosher? Antelope. An antelope. So those are chayas, and there's no isser to cook basar b'cholov min haTorah from them, and therefore, if you did cook them in milk, or you cooked a cow's meat in antelope milk, or deer milk, or buffalo milk, it's also not osur from the Torah, and you're allowed to have enjoyment from it. Okay. Okay. Next. Fowl, chicken, birds, also doesn't apply to from the Torah. Min haTorah, you're allowed to cook chickens in milk. It doesn't become osur to eat. Surely doesn't become osur b'hanoah, right? It's only rabbinically prohibited, and therefore chicken and milk you're allowed to have benefit from. Okay, you can't eat it midrabban. It's osur midrabban to eat. Okay, what's it called? Cooking chicken. Is osur also midrabban. Cooking chicken and milk is also osur. So if you're in a cooking class and you're not going to eat it, you can't cook it either, right? But some poskim hold that only applies to chicken, but it doesn't apply to non-domesticated animals. In other words, if you're in cooking class and they're cooking deer and milk, you can cook it. Not only isn't it osur from the Torah b'hanoah, obviously you're not allowed to eat it, right? That's osur midrabanan. But the cooking part, or if they're cooking pig in milk, you'd also be allowed to do that. Even though chicken in milk, you're not allowed to do. Because chicken, they were more afraid that since it's an edible thing and it's usual, chayas are not as usual as chickens are, that you'd come to cook milk and meat regular, so they ushered cooking fowl in milk also. But the other kinds of things could be that they're not usher to cook. Okay. Next thing, fish. Fish is allowed to be cooked in milk, except there is a minig not to cook milk and fish together. Even according to that minig, many people have the idea that it's only milk that's osur, but butter is okay. Right? Basically, Ashkenazim don't have this issur b'chlal. It's based on a Beis Yosef that most poskim hold is a mistake in the printing. And it's really talking about fish and meat, not fish and milk. It's a total mistake. But there are poskim hold, it's not a mistake. And since it's a Beis Yosef, Sfardim follow it. Ashkenazim, it's not mentioned b'chlal by the Ramah, nobody, such a thing, right? And therefore, all Ashkenazim, no Ashkenazim, don't eat milk and fish, except Lubavitchers. Lubavitchers also are machmer not to eat fish and milk, just like fish and meat. And But even the people who don't eat milk and fish eat butter and fish. So therefore, there is such a shita that you shouldn't cook fish in dairy products. Okay. So if you know of somebody who does that, they're not totally off the wall. They're basically, Sfardim will hold of this. Not all Sfardim hold of it. Okay. And therefore, what famous thing is milk? Oh yeah, you know what they don't do? They don't eat lox and cream cheese.
What?
And I'm offended.
They don't eat lox and cream cheese. They that would be the what?
Are we talking about cooking them?
No, cooking them or eating them together, like any what's it called? Like you can't, just like a fish and meat, you don't eat together or cook them together or whatever.
And even though cream cheese isn't actually milk, it's a milk product.
Yeah, but it's not buttery. But it's not butter either. The only exception would be butter.
Fish and meat is a different reason.
No, that's the same thing. That the same way that fish and meat is a sakana, they hold that milk and fish is the same. Milk and fish is the same thing.
What about brick cream cheese? Not like the J&J spread.
It's the same thing.
It's
not butter. It's not made the same way as butter. Butter is the only exception. Cheeses, they don't use cheese in with fish. We don't have such a minik, so to us it's foreign. But for somebody who has that minik, they don't use fish and cheese, fish and milk, fish and cream cheese, anything like that. Just the only exception, according to some, is butter. Okay. Next, what's considered milk? Whey. Whey is a milk derivative. It's not the whole milk. It's what after you make cheese, so the part of the curds and the whey, right? Who was that? Eating her curds and whey? Little Miss Muffet, right? So curds and whey, the curds are the part of the milk that coagulates and becomes cheese. And the whey is the part that that comes off of that as a byproduct. After you take the curds out of the milk, what's left is the whey. There's also what's called nisuve mecholov, is the total liquid clear part, the liquid part. That doesn't have a din of milk, according to most opinion. But the whey is called nisuve cholov. It still has solids in it, but those solids don't go into making the cheese. So it's not full milk, it's part of the milk. It's part of the component. Milk, that's considered milk. And whey and meat is asur min haTorah to cook together. If you did, you can't have enjoyment from it. That's a Torah prohibition. It's vari derabanan, for sure, but it's even min haTorah. Next thing, human milk. Okay? Human milk also is not asur from the Torah. Not necessarily because a human being is considered a non-kosher animal. Because a human being could be not an animal altogether. It's a machlokas. It could be that there is no iser minatora to eat a human being. Aside from murder or whatever, but that if you ate human meat, right, is not also minatora. Because it says this is what you eat, these animals, and if it doesn't chew its cud and have split hooves, it's osur, but that's only by animals. But a human being is not an animal, so even though we don't have split hooves and we don't chew our cud, which most people don't, some people I know look like they do, we are, what's it called, not considered trefa animals. We're not animals. So it could be there's only an essay, as zetochlu and not this, and some corner there's not even an essay. They can't eat people for other reasons, okay, but not because we're non-kosher animals. But still, human milk isn't included. Human milk and human meat, obviously, is not included either. Yeah?
But isn't there a mitzvah that people are supposed to be... isn't there a mitzvah of meis mitzvah? So if someone eats someone else, so then there won't be any more mitzvah of meis mitzvah?
No, there's a mitzvah of... people are osur bahanoah, a dead body is osur bahanoah, right? But not because we're a non-kosher animal. That's a separate reason. That's because a dead body is osur bahanoah. It's a separate thing. Okay.
Is that
min haTorah? What?
Is that min haTorah?
The osur hanoah by a dead body is pashas osur min haTorah. We learn
it. It's also osur.
What? Then it is also osur because of the osur hanoah. Yeah. Okay. But if it's not a dead body, right? Somebody's a part of his flesh came out. Okay, when he's alive.
Surgery.
Yeah, and they, what's it called? They did one of these, you know,
amputation.
What? Amputation. Not an amputation, so I guess an aver. They took, you know, the guy's fat out, you know, to make him one of these, what are they called? Right. That would be, according to some, mutter to eat. Okay, I hope everybody eats supper already. We're getting far afield from all of this. Okay. But the basic point is that human milk does not make basar b'cholov, and it's not even usur from the Torah if it gets... You're not allowed to eat mother's milk, mamish, I mean real mother's milk, and meat together. But if it gets mixed in with meat by accident, right? A woman expressed her milk into a bottle, and there's residue of the milk in the bottle, and it falls into meat. If you can't see the milk, if you can see the milk, you have to skim it off. If you can't see it, it got mixed in, there's no isser, you don't need shishim, it's a bottle. And you don't have to worry about it. Okay. Artificial milk. Parva milk. So they used to have parva milk. We have today soy milk, right? And we have other things that are parva, that look like milk products, ice cream, margarine. So what's halacha with them? So the Gemara speaks about what they used to have as parva milk was almond milk. They used to make milk out of almonds. And there the halacha was, because of marasayin, because it looks like milk, right? You can't cook meat in almond milk unless there's almonds in the milk, so it's obvious that it's almond milk. Okay? And you can't have almond milk together with meat, in other words, to drink almond milk together with your salami sandwich, unless there's almonds floating in the milk. So it's clear that this is not real milk, it's almond milk.
Is that the same thing with coconut milk?
What?
Is that the same with
coconut? No, coconut milk, it doesn't look like real milk. This almond milk looks like real milk.
It's like the lime.
Coconut milk is just cold milk. It's like, it's a juice, that's all. It's juice. What? It's not a milk, it's juice.
What about soy or cream?
So 1 second. So today, soy milk looks, has the same texture as milk, just like the almond milk.
Okay.
And so that would be the same thing. So first of all, there are some opinions that say that this halacha only applies to mamish meat. But chicken, you don't have to have the almonds in the milk. For chicken, since it's only the Rabbanan anyway, so the Rabbanan didn't make an issur the Rabbanan on it, the Rabbanan. However, many poskim hold that's not the case, and therefore, almond milk, we'll see, maybe it's different today, needed to have almonds in it in order to shouldn't be marasai.
It's like the Diet Coke with the lime, you know, you have to put the lime in the Diet Coke in order to know that it's diet,
you
know, the weddings.
The what?
The lime. In the
Diet Coke. So right, so now the thing is like this. How about things? So there, that people, some people say, and pretty much we're no egg like that. That was only then when almond milk was a substitute, but it wasn't that widespread. So if you saw something that looked like the texture of milk, you would assume it was milk. You wouldn't assume it's almond milk. Therefore, they had to have a simen. But b'zman hazeh, the parva milks are so, like parva dairy cream or whatever, are so usual, they're just as usual as milk. And everybody knows that if you serve it a fleishik of meal, you know, dairy creamer, that it's not dairy, that it's a parva milk. It's clear. It's just as common as milk. And therefore, used to be a shaila whether you had to keep the container on the table, you know, that said it was parv in order that it shouldn't be marasayin. And therefore you couldn't bring it in those servers, you had to bring it in the original container. But bisman hazeh, come on, everybody is no egg, all the caterers or whatever, that at the end of the meal they bring those, you know, in a metal thing, they don't have the container on the table, and they're not afraid of marasayin, because it is common to use part of the milk by a fleishik of meal as it is to use regular milk. By a regular meal. It's just as common. Same thing goes for margarine. You can cook with margarine, you can, it's clear that margarine is as common as butter. And therefore it's not marasayin. Somebody sees you, you know, basting your chicken with what looks like butter, then you're gonna know for sure it's not butter. There's no marasayin. They know it's margarine. It's just as common as butter. It's no reason to assume that it's butter. It's something that looks like butter. We know it's margarine. So therefore, that's also okay. And some people are machmer that they don't do that. But there is another kula that is only if you do it publicly. But if you're eating a private meal where there's nobody around, normally we say that something that's usher because of marasayin is usher even bechadrei chadorim, even alone. But that's something that's usher because people will think you're doing something that's usher from the Torah. But here it's not usher from the Torah anyway, right? The if you're doing it with chicken or whatever. So therefore, you can rely on this. But the nice of the world is no way. If you want to be machmer, there's a place to be machmer. But I don't know of anybody who's machmer. The world is no way to use margarine without any problem, to serve what's it called, parva ice cream, without any problem, without having any kind of hecker, to use soy milk without any problem. He says over here that a possible problem would be. He says what could be still a problem today is cheeses that are parv, right? They have cream cheese, parv a cream cheese. It looks like cream cheese. They have parv a cheesecakes, right? That looks like cream cheese. There, it's not as common as margarine or soy milk or parva ice cream or whatever. I'm not sure anymore. Truth is that the people know that if you have, like, there's parva cheesecakes, just as much as milchiko cheesecakes, and people know that there's parva cheeses, right? It's a very common thing. In fact, my wife picked up by mistake, but it's a great thing, parva pizza with cheese. Not with, you know, parva pizza with nothing on top. With parva cheese on top. You saw it here. It has a bedarat sechshira. So I guess they hold that it's as common to have parva cheese today, and people know that there's such a thing as parva cheese. If you see it, you're not going to be choshed that it's real cheese. You'll understand that it's parv. So that all of that is mutter, even without any kind of hecker. Okay, without keeping the label on or putting... I don't know what else you could do, whatever. They're probably keeping a label, keeping it in the original packing where you could see that it's margarine or parva ice cream or so on. Okay. That so, pretty much, yeah.
Is it the same thing if it's the meat that's actually parva? Like if it's a pie that looks like a hamburger but it's made from vegetables?
Yeah, probably since Bisman Hazeh, especially here in Eretz Yisrael, right, parva meat is... very, very common, right? I mean, we were here as tourists, when we came to look at Matit Yohu, right? The first time we came for 11 days, we spent checking out the Moshav and stayed here. So we ate by all different people. And in America, at that time for sure, right, nobody ever heard of parva meat, right? It was, meat was meat. But here, it already was very common to have, you know, mixly, things that look like chopped meat, but it was parv. But in America, at that time, it was not yet a thing. So we ate by the Wiesenbergs, and they seemed like really nice from people, right, especially English people. And ate what tasted like chopped meat. And then Siri came and said, would you like milk with your, I don't know if it was tea or coffee or whatever. And my wife looked like in horror, like, you know, why, these people, you know, don't even know what about Basar Mechalov yet.
And I remember something worse. We were invited to another family once, Shabbos morning, and I said, Sean, there's a Nikilat inside. And after there was milky ice cream. And I pronounced it, what's going on? She said,
so at that time, but today it's obvious that there is what's it called. I once had a person ask me a shaila in Miami. They made what's it called Morningstar Farms had parva meat, but it wasn't parva; it was milchik. There was milchik ingredients in it, but it looked like meat, it looked like bacon or whatever. And then they had parva milk. And they right, and that, and that the part of the milk had been cooked in a fleishika thing, so they had a problem. Basar b'chalav, the milk was meaty and the meat was milky. But I think today it's common that everybody knows that there's what looks like meat is not meat, what looks like milk is not milk, and it's so nafutz that there's no marasayin. You assume, nobody's going to assume that they're mixing milk and meat. They'll know that the meat is parav or the milk is parav. Lanias daiti, there's no need. And the truth is that the whole world, nobody's makbid to have any kind of hekker anymore on all these things. You use parav meat and milk without any reservation. So I think you can rely on that. Is there a place to be machmer? Maybe, but I don't know of anybody who's machmer anymore. Huh?
If you're Max Chiloni, you don't want to have a cheeseburger.
I don't know. I mean, they may not, because they're not aware maybe of, you know, the fact that there's such a thing, because it doesn't make a difference to them. Maybe. I don't know.
What was the famous person there? It's called Andy's.
Andy's?
Sarah.
Okay. Schmappers. But you could really have a completely parv one. Then they used to make it with cheese and parv a meat. But now you could have it with parv a cheese and milk and meat and the.
But the Matthias and Eretz Israel has changed to a different extent also. In those days when you came to eat by Chagi's house 30 years ago, so the soya schnitzel and the parv hamburgers was widespread in Eretz Israel. But no Israeli had ever in his life seen a cheeseburger. There wasn't Burger King and McDonald's in Eretz Israel.
Right.
Now, the Chilonis Israelis, as you mentioned, they have seen a cheeseburger and have eaten cheeseburgers. So the Maris Ayin now came back in the Maizet.
Because it's not common to have.
It was never been such an issue before, but now they've seen a cheeseburger and they'll see you eating one. Well, it looks like one.
Maybe. Even though it's common to have parva hamburgers. I mean, that people eat them all the time, right?
These people know that they know that there is such a mitzvah, cheese on a hamburger. You go to McDonald's and you order a cheeseburger.
Right.
And they know there is one.
I hear.
And now that Mars Ayin, once again, was misora.
But they also know that there's part of the hamburgers.
There's probably not much of a anyways.
What?
The McDonald's.
Well, it was trade for meat. I don't think so. I think they here in Eretz Israel, you know, in Kutzlar's problem. But here it's only trade for meat. No, it's cow meat, it's beef.
Yeah.
It's just not shechted. That already is worse. Right? They don't give you horse meat in McDonald's or pig meat or no. They don't do that. I assume so. It says 100% beef. What could be trade about it? There's no additives, no vegetable oils, nothing.